The White Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Heretics Hour on July 15th, 2013. There's lots to talk about tonight. It all comes under the umbrella of race, more or less. Race is real, but also ethnicity. Ethnicity is real, too. Every race has a very different culture, and culture is important. Ethnicities have different cultures, too, that separate them, but not as different as between races. Tan Stoffel, who keeps the White Network functioning behind the scenes and who maintains the long-running blog Age of Treason, which is known for its deep analysis of racial ethnic conflicts, will join me after the break and we'll discuss what the George Zimmerman trial verdict revealed more clearly than ever. In fact, it's amazing what has come forth, what has been expressed from President Obama and his Attorney General to the lowliest woman on the street. In this hour, though, I will cover some items from Germany, a little bit of follow-up from my Saturday afternoon show with Gunter Deckert, and then Europe and Israel, maybe, and the United States for sure, and even my own state of Texas. I've been very interested right from the start in the so-called neo-Nazi terrorist activity discovered in Germany that was supposedly carried out by three people over a number of years, and it has been named the National Socialist Underground. These three people supposedly had a terror cell, which they called, I don't know why they would, but they called the National Socialist Underground. And I've posted about this on my website, carolynyeager.net. It seems to me, and other people too, that this is a political agenda of the ruling parties to further smear and weaken the right, and the nationalist parties, the right and the nationalist parties, especially the NPD, which they would like to ban as a political party. We talked a bit about that, all these things on Saturday. But tonight, I want to say that the agency in Germany responsible for keeping the laws and that kind of thing is the Federal Office for the Protection of the Constitution. That, I would say, is the closest equivalent to our Justice Department, which is today under the leadership of Eric Holder, the first black man to hold that office. So when Gunter was on the Saturday program, he mentioned that it had come out, that testimony in the trial about the gun that was used in, according to the prosecution, that was used to murder all eight Turks and one Greek by these three terrorists, terrorists in quotes. Well, there's a problem with it. There's a problem with the testimony about this gun. And I'm going to go over what is in my post that I posted, I think day before yesterday, but late, so kind of like yesterday. But first I want to point out some of the conflicts in the relationship between the Federal Office for the Protection of the Constitution, the hatred of and the desire to ban the NPD, the National Democratic Party, or I think it originally was the National Party of Deutschland. I don't know, but I think they may have changed it to the Democratic Party to, because, you know, if you're not a if you don't promote democracy in Germany and in Europe, you're looked upon as very dangerous and not good, because after 1945 everything, you know, had to be democratic as an effort to counteract the horrible years of the National Socialists and the Hitler regime. So, but anyway, everybody knows it as the NPD, and that's what I'll be calling it. And also this big effort to convict this NSU, National Socialist Underground, of hate crimes and murder of foreigners. So this all ties in together, and it also, I hope you will notice, it ties in with what we're experiencing today, and not the first time, but it's very clear what's going on today with the George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin trial and verdict and the response to the verdict, which I will go into in the second hour when Tan comes on. But, you know, it's the, as I said, this, our Justice Department is kind of mirrored in the Federal Office for the Protection of the Constitution in Germany. They have to have a long name like that, I guess. And I don't know any way to really shorten it, so I'll be saying that quite often. But first, I'm going to go into this, and the National Socialist Union witness story is wrong. Well, before I go into that, I want to tell you a little bit of some information that has come out because of the NSU scandal. It became a scandal rather than just a big criminal investigation because of what has been considered to be the blunders and the bad work and incompetence of the Office for the Protection of the Constitution. In 2003, this all ties in together, in 2003, there was an attempt to ban the National Democratic Party, the NPD, Nationalist Party, in Germany. The one that Gunter Deckert was the leader of from 90 to 94 or 91 to 95, something like that. Then he went into prison, and so he gave it up, and it never was, never took it back up again. Now, so this attempt in 2003, went to the Federal Constitutional Court, and they refused. They turned it down. They said that, and the reason was because more than 130 confidential informants for police and domestic security had infiltrated the party. That is, this party, which is not very big to begin with, had at least 130 confidential informants. That is, people whose names could not be given out. They were promised, even to courts and so on, to anyone, you know, because then their cover would be blown, very much like our spy agencies and so on. And they had infiltrated the party, and they were acting as party members. In fact, one of them was Udo Holtmann, who was the leader of the National Democratic Party state chapter in North Rhine-Westphalia. That's the largest state, I think the largest population, and they always have the most influence of all the states because of that, or they're looked to as kind of a barometer of what the feelings are and so on. And he was the leader of that large state party. And he found, it was discovered that it had leaked out or something, that he had been collaborating with the Federal Office for the Protection of the Constitution for 24 years. 24 years! He was seen as a big NPD leader and was giving information to this government office, comparable to our Justice Department. And therefore, the court, and there are a lot of these people, and therefore, the court said that they could not distinguish between the party's ideology of its own and what these informants might have added to it or brought to it. Therefore, the security agencies declined to disclose their identities, whatever, excuse me, whatever that means. I guess what I just said, that they were not allowed to be identified. And so, nor did the police give relevant background information on these people. And so, they threw that out. And so it was a big kind of embarrassment to the other parties and the government for trying to have this done, and they didn't succeed, and all this information came out about how the right, what it comes down to is the major right wing, I call it that, I mean, they kind of call it that in Europe, but nationalists, the major nationalist and, yes, right-wing party in Germany, which is so demonized by the other parties and the whole left-wing establishment, they have been so infiltrated, and you can't even tell what is their own program and what is the program of these that these infiltrators have brought about. So there's not much to it, you know. I mean, it's just kind of it's sort of embarrassing all the way around. Anyway, apart from that, talking about this these National Socialist Underground. I'm not going to say that because it's the murder of these eight people, seven Turks and one Greek, believe it is. These murder of these eight foreigners, they're usually called Turks, but there was one Greek in there, between 2000 and 2006, you know, was after a certain event took place, when the officers were closing in on these two, on the two men, members of this three-member cell, after a bank robbery or something, and they allegedly committed suicide. One killed the other, then killed himself in agreement. This is supposedly what happened. And the only one left was this woman, Beata Chapa, who is now on the one who's on trial. Anyway, when this happened, they searched the premises and so on. They searched everything and they found stuff that they thought proved, including they found this gun, which they later said is the gun that actually killed all eight of these people. And let's see. So when the last of these Turks was killed in 2006, he was killed inside his internet cafe. He owned this internet cafe. These were all very small businessmen who were killed. Very small. They all owned, they call them the donor killings, but they owned these donor stands. That's some kind of Turkish, food, that fast food type thing that you sell. I think it is. And they all own something, you know, where little food places or cafes or little stores, like that. And the last one that was murdered, inside his cafe in 2006, it was at the time an officer of the Hessian State Office for the Protection of the Constitution was inside that cafe. I'm not exactly sure how that came out, but that's what is known. And so that was like questions. Well, what was he doing in there? Of course, they have all these people are working as undercover agents. So this guy Hesse is one of the states. So it was another, not the same as the, North Rhine-Westphalia, but another German state, and he was one of the officers in the state office of the protection of the Constitution, like, you know, the Justice Department type thing. And he was inside there, but nothing could be said about it because but they found out that his name was he was an agent. He was being used as an agent, and his name was Andreas T. And he openly held right-wing views. I don't know if he was right-wing or if he just acted out the part for so many years. I mean, he was he was openly right-wing. In his home village, he was known by the nickname of Little Adolf. This is just how convincing they make these people. They're very active. Naturally, we know when agents infiltrate, they always try. They're very gung ho, you know. They volunteer to do things. They move right up to the top because that's what they're there for. And they're just the ideal member, you know, because they're willing to do all this stuff. And so, that's the way these people were. And since then, after this was discovered, he's been transferred to an administrative post, outside and unrelated to the agency. Then there's another situation just recently in 2012, since this case opened up where, and I don't know what order to put this in, but I'll do it this way, that the Federal Office for the Protection of the Constitution, this is the actual federal office, not one of the state offices, and it had received a formal request from the German Federal Criminal Police Office to forward all information relevant to the crimes of this NSU group, supposedly, NSU case. And after it had received that request, some employees in this agency, the federal office, had destroyed some files connected with the NSU case that had their role in it, that spoke about their role in it after all this became public. And they destroyed these files, and so the president was held responsible because he didn't say anything about it after they did that. And so he resigned from there. And I don't know, then later two more resignate, obviously those agents who destroyed the files were no longer affiliated with it, but I don't know that there has been any prosecution of these people. I doubt this president of the big wheel of the whole deal will be prosecuted, but I can't say for sure what's going on with that. But there were two more presidents of state offices, the one in Thuringia and Thuringia and Saxony, were also resigned because of knowing about all this. So there's been a lot of scandal, and what happens is that they're saying that this security services and this Office for the Protection of the Constitution is just blundering and is incompetent, has not done its job, and that's been the big scandal going on, along with all this propaganda promoting that, calling these three people who make up this, National Socialist Underground as being murderers, and there's this trial going on, but in the press, it's and on television, and even from government people. They just talk as though it's a done deal, and these people they're guilty, and this is exactly the way it happened. So what's so interesting then? Now I'm going to go over to my post on the website, which I posted Saturday night, and it's called "The Smoking Gun in the NSU Trial." And what was found out, and I got this from Gunter Deckard on Saturday, because I had not. Known, I'd not heard about it, and I don't know how I would have heard about it since I can't read everything that's being talked about, everything in the German press. So I was really glad he told me about this, and I looked into it after the show, and I finally found what I needed. And what the deal is here is that this gun that they say was used in the murder of all these people. And the National Socialist Underground is accused of murdering 10 people between 2000 and 2007. Well, one of them is that, the last one is a female agent of this, Office for the Protection of the Constitution, or she's a police officer or something. And she was killed, and they say, they killed her. And prior to that, so maybe it was eight Turks and one Greek, or maybe there was another person that they stuck in there too. I get confused about it, or I read different things and it has different numbers. You know, they don't always have it right. So, but anyway, let's say the official thing is supposedly 10 people between 2000 and 2007. Now you can ask too, why did they stop in 2007? You know, if they were going so well, killing these foreigners, that's what they wanted to do. Somebody said the only purpose for this underground little group was to kill foreigners. That was their reason for being, which really isn't true, but doesn't make sense. But after 2007, between then and 2012, say, or 2011-12, when they were discovered, why didn't they continue? What were they doing then? But anyway, this witness that the government has, now there were this, once Beta Chapa turned herself in because a warrant was out for her arrest, they discovered her too, and she eventually, after a short time, went and turned herself into her local police station, and after she's been in custody ever since, and she is now accused of being, involved in all these murders. So she's on trial for this, and this trial, it took forever to get underway because they were investigating and building their case, and they had 300 investigators working on this case. 300. And that's just the investigators working to find the information they wanted and put it together. So they've done this huge job and they finally get started, excuse me, with the trial. And then it's been going very, very slowly. It's been going on for a couple of months, but only a few days really in court. And there's been a long break since the last, testimony was heard from this Karsten S., who was supposedly cooperating with these three people several years ago. And he is the one, they say, and he says that he bought the gun and gave it to them. They, at their request, they had requested a gun, a handgun, with ammunition in the year 2000. Okay, so this is the story, that in the year 2000, he handed over this gun to them. And this meeting, according to the testimony, took place in a cafe in a department store restaurant in Chemnitz, which is close to, the town that they live in. What is the name of that town that they were spending most of their, that they all came from? They weren't living, well, I don't, it's in the former East Germany anyway. And this department store was named Galleria Kaufhof. Well, he goes on to say how they met in that restaurant there. And, it's not really, a fancy restaurant. It's a kind of a fancy looking store, but it's a brand new store with a fancy glass facade, the one in Chemnitz, but it's, the restaurant was a self-service type restaurant. So you could just get with something what you wanted and sit down there. And, he handed the gun over to him when probably wrapped up and so on as they met there. And that was, he said in, September, I have to go through all this to get all this information. September, 2000, I think. Sorry about this. But then what Gunter told me, and this testimony was several, about a month ago or so at least, or if not more. And since then, people looked up and found that this Galleria Kaufhof was not completed until 2002. And I found the source for that information on the Wikipedia page of the architect. I was looking all over for it and couldn't find it, but it was on the page of the architect that he completed it then, and that's been confirmed. And so the thing is that his testimony now is compromised at the least. I don't know if right now what they're doing is these attorneys are arguing. I think that Beta Chapa has some good attorneys, who are three of them, who are really trying to help her. And so they may be arguing about this right now and wanting to throw the whole thing out. But the first murder was in the year 2000, and the second one was in 2000 also, the third one in 2001, the fourth one in 2001. And then after that, the fifth one was in 2004. Well, you know, this store didn't open until 2002. And so when they couldn't have been meeting there in the year 2000. When he says they met, he said that he got a phone call and in 2000, they requested a gun. He found a gun, and then they had this meeting, and he handed it over to them, and this was his testimony. And this testimony has been prepared and worked on from during this whole investigation. So it's kind of shocking now to find out that there's a serious problem like this in it. Now, I don't know what they can do, if they can just, they can't ignore it, because the defense attorneys will make a point of it, but they may be able to say, he got it mixed up. You know, he got his years. He wouldn't have got his year mixed up. He would have had to got mixed up where they were when he gave them the pistol, which is kind of hard. You know, it's kind of hard to be so clear that you're in this particular place and restaurant, and then you say, oh, no, I wasn't there. We were in a different place. Or this is a serious problem. So, because I'm so interested in this, it makes me very happy to learn about this and to wonder what's going to go on. And I do say at the end, and it's true, that Carson S. gave his testimony in early to mid-June, and there hasn't been any more reporting about any days where the trial opened up or there's been any more testimony or anything going on about it. And this could be the reason. On just recently, on July 9th, it was announced, and I saw this in a German the English language German newspaper, that it was announced by the people who are running the court that the trial has been moved forward one whole year. It was expected to end in early 2014, early next year, but now they say. They will bring it to a close before the end of next year, the end of 2014. So almost a whole year they're adding on. And to me, that tells me that they've got problems and they realize they have to go. I'm calling it going back to the drawing board. You know, they've got to figure out what to do from here. And, you know, they don't say anything. And do you find the news media in Germany asking any questions about this? Do you see, are there any stories that say, well, what's going on with that trial? Why this big delay and bringing any of this up? No. There was one right-wing magazine that Gunter told me about. It's all in German. First talked about this. They're the ones who wrote about this business with the department store and when it opened. But none of the regular news media are saying a word about it. And the reason why this is of interest tonight is because this is the way it's done. You know, this is the way it's done because the government and its agencies have a vested interest in a certain political point of view and certain political parties You know, it's not a democracy. It's not a democracy. There's no democracy anywhere because it's if the people are only the people are told what they want them to hear and not told what they don't want them to hear. And we see all this going on here with the Zimmerman trial. And as I said, Tan and I are going to talk about that. There's lots to talk about that's really interesting. So moving on from this, I think I've said enough about this. I want to move on to Hungary. I've been posting some things about Hungary too, and Viktor Orban's government. You know, I'm particularly fond of the Jobbik party in Hungary. Orban is not a Jobbik. He would never have been elected president. If he was, there's still quite a minority, the Jobbik. But it's amazing how much support they have. And they are the number three party now, but still they're way down. Orban's Fidesz party is a conservative to the right. You'd call it, they'd call it center-right, but they want to sound moderate. But they want to change Hungary to a more out of the super liberal European kind of system that everybody has today, and they want to get away from the Jewish banking and the control of their finance. Well, they want to get away from the control of this whole. Of the EU and the Jewish and the international banks and so on. They want to be hungry for Hungarians because they don't like the Roma and they don't like the Jews, in their country. They're not allowed to do things the way the Hungarians want to do things. Orban is, I think, doing a pretty good job, although he can't be too radical or he'd really be in trouble. And he doesn't come down hard on the Jobbik party. They support his government. And there's one more party that does. I can't think of what it is. But in Hungary, after the Fidesz party, which has a big majority, which is good, the second party is a socialist party. Just the opposite, which had been the ruling party until Orban, till there was an election and there was some scandal in the high levels of that party and in the government. And so Orban won a huge victory, 2/3 of the vote he got. And so he had a big mandate. And then Jobbik Socialist Party is quite a bit behind the Fidesz party now, and behind that then is the Jobbik party. So because there aren't any other strong parties, the Jobbik party is the number three party in the country now. And then there's one after them that is a kind of a right wing, and they're supporting Orban. Anyway, the latest thing that happened after this flap with the European Union over that they think that Hungary is veering away from democracy. The European Union has been, shaking its finger at Hungary. He's very unhappy with Orban because of the policies he's putting into place, which he's been able to because of his huge majority, which they don't like either, it's too much like what Adolf Hitler had, but this is what's going on there, and they're going to punish Hungary financially and economically. But now what's happened is that I saw this little story that Hungary is considering paying back an early bailout loan from the International Monetary Fund. And they want this organization to close its office in Budapest. They tell them they don't need to have an office anymore. The International Monetary Fund doesn't have to have an office open in Budapest because they're not going to renew this kind of a program, and they've almost got it. They're ready to end it. And Hungary has a national bank, and the national bank president said Monday in a letter that addressed to the IMF. I think this might have been last Monday because I just saw this recently. To the IMF chief, which is Christine Lagarde, L-A-G-A-R-D-E. I'm sure most of you, many of you have seen her name in the news. She's always in the news about European, in Europe, because she's the International Monetary Fund chief, a female. That he wrote that they appreciate the valuable support the Washington-based group gave the country. See, the IMF is based in Washington, D.C., and that the credit program they had is almost complete. They've got it almost paid back, and they're no longer, so it's no longer necessary for the IMF to keep an office in Hungary. And this loan had been given during the socialist-led government before Orbán came into power for 20 billion euros. And, you know, this is how they keep you in line, and they keep you, you know, on the leash by constantly getting you to accept their loans, and then you have to pay them back. And CEO Orban's government, he's got a different approach to this. So they want to become more independent, although they don't want to leave the European Union. That would be very hard and bad for Hungary, but they don't want to be puppets, you know, either. So anyway, they're not going to renew this, and he wants the IMF out of the country so it won't be scrutinizing his economic policies. Well, that's very good. I think he's going along quite well. And then another little comment from about Europe. And you know, we've talked about how the Eurozone and the desire of Brussels for the Eurozone members to all join together in this shared fund where they all put their money in the banks are all involved, and they have a certain amount that has to be available, and if the money is needed by this nation's bank or that nation's bank, it's all about banks, then the money will be given where it's needed. And Germany has been against that all along, because Germany is a major funder, and they know that they'll be called upon all the time to provide the money, and you can't say no when you're in this thing. And so she's talking kind of tough now, because these elections are coming up in September in Germany, and she wants to be reelected, and she probably will be. Nothing is ever sure, but right now it looks like it. And she doesn't want to mess that up, so she's acting like she's really standing up to him. But a lot of people think, including me, not that I'm an expert on any of this, that she will soften up as soon as she's reelected, the elections are over. And then she's in for what, another 6 years? Or is it 4 years? Anyway, you know, then she'll go ahead and sell out the German people. And she'll try to make it seem like she can't do anything else, and they have to be European, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, somebody, a senior diplomat in Paris, also said, made the comment, I expect, you know, the prime minister, the president of France, François Hollande, he's a socialist, absolutely a socialist, and they voted in this socialist. And so this senior diplomat in Paris said, I expect François Hollande and Angela Merkel to accelerate the drive towards European integration. He said they have to set out a convincing vision. And he means after the election. He says he thinks that post-election, that's what they were talking about, post-election, this will happen. And they will cooperate. The two of them, and with the the European integration, which is what we don't want. We don't want that to happen. So, this is the way things are going, and this is where the power is now. Here's something from the local. Oh yeah, another thing that's in Germany right now going on. I'm going to try to make this pretty quick. A school closed, they say, due to lack of local children. It's outside of Berlin. It's in the Marzahn-Hellersdorf area of Berlin, kind of a suburbs. And they closed this school, and they're converting it into a home, or they have converted it, into a home for 400 refugees. Now, they don't say where, but later on it implies that, makes it clear that these are probably black people, people from Africa and North Africa and so on. I forget where that was, but... And so the people of the area are protesting this, and the local NPD party is leading the protest, and they've had some meetings, and they've got a lot of people showing up. It says that the press said that more people showed up than the police estimated. The police estimated 800 people to show up at this big meeting that was called, and there was more than that, but they don't tell you how many. Of course, it's being presented as these people are just insensitive and giving the wrong impression of Germans, and Germans want to be seen as open and welcoming people and blah blah. But they're trying a big action against this, the NPD and others who don't like it. And they even go so far, the newspaper said, that at this meeting, or as they're gathering, people are shouting Germany for Germans and no to the home and even what do I care for others suffering. Now, I don't know if they've actually said that. You know, see how they present things. This is just something that's going on. This is where they're pushing these people into Europe, and it says so. And then there's been a counter movement that's been pushed by you can see that it's probably financed by the Jews and others, liberal groups and so on, and they've got a Facebook page, and they've attracted, it says, the support of nearly 5,000 people on their Facebook page. These are the people who want the asylum seekers to come, and they say Hellersdorf helps asylum seekers. So they call this desire, this dislike of having these refugees come, a dangerous atmosphere. You know how that is, ominous, you know, right, raising the specter of national Nazism, what they call, and so on. So, but these people, it says, are fleeing war and daily terror. Well, this is what the group that wants to help them says. It says, we need to help those who are fleeing war and daily terror, give them a humane place to live and the chance to integrate into society. See, so, you know, we don't know if they're fleeing war and daily terror. But they want to come to Germany, and Germany then is supposed to do this for them, supposed to give them a place to live and allow them to integrate. Well, they probably won't integrate, but who wants them to integrate anyway? And they say these are people, not criminals. You know, you shouldn't see them as potential criminals. Well, we know better about all that. But that's just one of those things that's going on. And this president of Germany, Joachim Gauck, has called on Germans to see refugees and immigrants as a chance for the country's future, saying they should be welcomed with open arms as they could help maintain living standards for coming generations. Can you imagine people fleeing war and famine and so on, where they're coming from and how they're going to do this? But the thing is, Germans have a very low birth rate, and while Gunter Deckert seems to minimize that as an important, as something that is a reason for anything, I think it is, and it's hard to argue and just see these politicians say, we need all these immigrants, we need refugees to come, and become a part of our country, or we won't have a future. We won't, you know, we can't maintain our living standard. Well, we know that these people reduce the living standard. I mean, this is a big lie, but this, you still have the question, how do you, you know, how do you keep your country going? Because if you didn't have all those foreigners coming, I really think people would have more children. They don't have children because everything looks so bleak. That's a big part of it. So the whole thing becomes a vicious circle and also a big lie. It says here that there's, in 2012, applications for asylum had risen by 41%, with more people fleeing Syria and the Balkans than previously. Well, there is war going on in Syria, but what are Syrians doing in Germany? And the Balkans, there's no war going on in the Balkans, but these people in the Balkans who are now considered, or who are, you know, part of Europe, want to get out of there and go to, you know, go into Western Europe, Northern Europe, and find something better. And they're just upsetting the whole, I've got all kinds of statistics here. Federal Office for Migration and Refugees said that last year, 6,000 people from Syria applied for asylum in Germany, an increase of 135% on the previous year. Well, that's because of the civil war in Syria. And could that be part of the reason why they do all that, create all these wars so they can get refugees that will have to go all around and, you know, get go into Europe and just keep changing? Now, the point I want to make real clear here is that I think the most important goal of the globalists, which includes, you know, the international Jews, is to destroy racial and national identity so that they will have the kind of people in the world that they want, who will not be able to stand up and who will just be consumers, will not have any deep feelings or beliefs about anything from the past or their own people, who they belong with, where they belong, and so on. So they can just be you. So the most important thing they want to accomplish is to destroy our identity, particularly of white people, white people's racial and national identity. And this is why all this goes on. And this is what we have to remember. This is why it's so important that we keep this, and that we inform, get more white people to hold on to this and not to let this go and think that it's okay, as Gunther said, that we just be world citizens. We don't need to be German citizens or French citizens or American citizens even. I mean, not American white citizens. I don't want to, I've got a lot of figures here, but I don't need to give them. I want to move on here. I want to go to, I don't have much time left. You know, in the United States, whites have fallen to a minority in the under 5 age group. Okay, it just keeps moving. It says in 2012, no, wait a minute. Okay. When did it happen that it was the births? Okay. It was just last year. Last year in the United States, whites recorded more deaths than births. Non-Hispanic whites, they say. So it's just us real white people. That was just last year. And now already it has moved to the under 5 age group. There are racial and ethnic minorities in this country make up half of the under 5 age group. So soon they will be over half, won't take long, and we will be, you know, a minority in the under 5 age group. And then it will be the under 10 age group, and then the under, you know, 18 age group. And that's the way it's going if we don't get this turned around, if something doesn't turn around. I want to finish off here. I didn't get to Israel. I thought I might not. But I want to finish off here with Texas, since it's the state I live in. And there's been a lot going on here with the abortion bill and the Texas Republicans in the legislature managed to pass this anti-abortion law, which the Democrats were fighting, you know, with all their might. And it's been, but we have, of course, a Republican president. He's kind of, he's an idiot. They're all idiots. But anyway, they've done this, and they're, the result is the closure, because it's the kind of facility you have to perform abortions has gone way up in standards, has to be a surgical type facility and so on. So that means of the 42 abortion clinics that are now in the state, only five of them will remain that can rise to that level, you know, that are that good. And it's going to be hard for poor people, if they say, to go to these more expensive type of clinics for their abortion. It'll have to cost more than these cheaper ones, I guess. And they, you know, so there's a huge fight. But the Republicans did pass it, and what the governor, what's his name, will sign it, and it'll go into law. But then, you know, what's coming from there? They're saying that this is going to cause a lot of Texans to become Democrat, to vote for the Democrats because of this abortion thing, because they think that more of the people want easy abortions than want to make them more difficult to get. And they talked about the Latino voting rates. This was an article in the Christian Science Monitor, so it wasn't necessarily, it wasn't like Reuters or AP. They're a little bit more, you can depend on them a little bit more. We're talking about the Latino voting rates in Texas. I hate that word Latino. The 2010 census showed that 45% of Texans are white, 38% are Latino, and 11% are black. That's really something. 38%. See, I wouldn't, I don't know. My area, I wouldn't think, it's not that high, but it's still probably in the 24% or something. In other places, it's, you know, if you go really south in Texas, close to Mexico, it's like 90 and 95%. But they're all over the state. But it says 10 years before, in 2000, it was 53 white to 32 Latino. Now it's 45 white and 38% Latino. But the thing is, the Latinos don't vote very, very much. And also, you know, a lot of them aren't citizens, so they don't vote. And a lot of them, it's a much younger population, that's for sure. All those youngsters haven't reached voting age yet. So it'll take a while. Plus, there's redistricting to save the Republicans. They can, if there's, as long as they stay in power, and they're pretty certainly in power in Texas now. Every 10 years, you can draw new districts on your map, and the party with, you know, in power has the most say on that, so they can do that. So they can kind of hold off the consequences of all this, but they're going to come, you know. This is the direction everything is going, and it's all about demographics, and also about the fact that we are, that this is being pushed by the establishment that is very much established. And let's see, what else have I got here? Okay, I can't talk about this Israel story. I don't have time, but I do want to give my view again on this idea of people who hate Israel, or who want to point the finger at Israel but not at Jews outside of Israel, you know, or just want to go after Israel because they feel for the Palestinians, and they see, but what they see wrong with Israel is that it's a supremacist, Jewish supremacist, racist nationalist entity. And this is what bothers me about people who fall for this. Well, let's beat up on Israel and let's get rid of Israel and get all those people who live in Israel and have them go somewhere else. And maybe Israel would just cease to exist or something if we can't get them to be democratic. You know, they don't seem to get it. I guess people are so used to being told that racism is bad. And if they can find that their enemy, or if they can think, well, the Jews are racist, so that's what's wrong with Jews, we'll criticize the Jews because of their racism. And, you know, I think this is so wrong, because I don't care if Jews love their own race and think they're better and want to be among themselves. We would want them to be among themselves. This is all helping the agenda that race is not real, and that races cannot segregate themselves, and that nobody can segregate themselves, really, that we have to be open to everyone in order to be tolerant and good and decent people, and that democracy is the ideal. This is saying that what we want is democracy. And truthfully, we don't want democracy. Democracy is what has allowed the Jews to get all the power that they have, and plenty of other problems. So, we need to get clear on, I mean, I don't know, I say we, I'm clear on this, and I wish more people were clear on it. Let me put it that way. Because as I already said, the number one global agenda is to get rid of racial identity and national identity. And this is just helping it along. So, if we're going to kill our racial identity, we're really done for. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the break. And so I'm looking forward to the next hour with Tan. We're going to be talking about this Zimmerman verdict. So stay with us. Be right back.
Liegen im Westen und Osten, sie liegen in aller Welt, und ihre Helme verrosten und Kreuz und Hügel zerfällt. Sie liegen verscharrt und versunken im Massengrab und im Meer, aber es leben Halunken und die ziehen noch über sie her. Heute tobt mit frechem Gebaren man durch Blätter und Lüge und Glanz. Sie fielen mit 18 Jahren in einem anderen Tanz. Heute tobt mit frechem Gebaren man durch Blätter und Lüge und Glanz. Sie fielen mit 18 Jahren in einem anderen Tanz. Sie waren nicht ausgezogen um Beute und schnöden Gewinn. Was heute verlacht und verlogen, es hatte für sie einen Sinn. Sie hatten ihr junges Leben nicht weniger lieb als die. Heute Höhnen es hinzugeben, sei reine Idiotie. Heute macht man mit funkelnden Wagen und Dünkel und Mammon starrt. Sie starben an vielen Tagen noch hinterm Stacheldraht. Heute macht man mit funkelnden Wagen und Dünkel und Mammon starrt. Sie starben an vielen Tagen noch hinterm Stacheldraht. Thank you. demonstrieren, mehr Freizeit bei höherem Lohn. Sie mussten ins Feld marschieren, der Vater, der Bruder, der Sohn. Sie gingen die Heimat zu schützen und haben allen entsagt, was kann uns der Einsatz nützen, hat keiner von ihnen gefragt. Sie haben ihr Leben und Sterben dem Vaterland geweiht und wussten nicht, welchen Herben und welche Erbärmlichkeit. Sie haben ihr Leben und Sterben dem Vaterland geweiht und wussten nicht, welchen Herben und welche Erbärmlichkeit. Und welche Erbärmlichkeit!
Now, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager, and you're listening to the Heretics Hour on July 15th, 2013. The title of this program is Race is Real. It might change, but who knows. And right now, I am just kind of waiting for Tan Stoffel to call in, and here he is. Wonderful. I didn't think I was going to have to answer anything. Hi, Tan.
Hi, Carolyn.
All right. Well, let's see. I'm going to go back to my other page. So, you know, I was covering a lot of things that are kind of similar in other parts of the country, particularly that what goes on in Germany as they try to denigrate those people who are on the right or who are not a part of the approved political persuasion. And as we know, what we have that going on here, basically against, of course, conservatives and the right, but especially against white people.
Right. Yeah, I heard what you were talking about. And one point that I heard that I'd like to echo is that the Jews have destroyed identity, white identity, and they've done it through pathologizing and demonizing white identity. And it's actually gone beyond that now. And what we're seeing actually is the destruction of the genetic identity. It's not just the idea itself of being white or what it means to be German or having borders being right and good and having, you know, being proud of your country and the people in it as they are and not wanting to change them. That was all destroyed over the past few decades. And what's actually getting started now in earnest is the genetic destruction.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I'm glad you put things so strongly and so so clearly, and you don't try to moderate to make it easier for people to take. So I'm really glad that was great what you just said. How do we start this? I think a good place to start maybe is I think I would assume that everybody listening and even people who are going to be listening to it later on, understand what's going on here. But maybe we should just say that with this, we're talking about the Trayvon Martin killing and the trial of George Zimmerman, which just was the jury just came out with its no guilty verdict on Saturday night, and there's been just a certain amount of protest in the streets, not the huge kind of destruction, but, you know, it's kind of subdued. But still, they, you know, they break windows, they run around doing lots of damage, and if they don't burn down an entire city, it's considered mild and nothing to worry about, you know, and nobody's...
Well, yeah, they're just misbehaving the way they normally do, which is why people don't want to be around them to begin with, why people profile them. But I think that what I said there about the genocidal destruction, the genetic level of destruction is ongoing, is that's the backdrop of this Trayvon Martin Zimmerman thing, is that option has been taken away from white people. We are prostrate now. We're flat. We have nobody in the mainstream media that's standing up and saying, hey, as a white man, I think whites are good and right and, you know, need to be defended, and I'm going to defend them. There is not a single voice. The mainstream Jews media is full of Jews who pretend to be white and blacks self-righteously defending blacks. Even, and what's so extreme about the Trayvon Martin case is that they're even willing to come to the defense of this junior thug, this thug in training, Trayvon Martin, and paint him instead as the victim, and blacks as a whole as victims, rather than the reality, which is everybody is afraid of blacks and wants to get away from blacks. We would defend ourselves if we could, if it wasn't for the fact that the government, which is, this is also evident in this case, comes down on you for trying to defend yourself from them. And even in a proactive defense like Zimmerman, you know, being a neighborhood watchman, being out in the neighborhood trying to confront people who look suspicious, or look like they're up to no good, that is what's being attacked here and what's being destroyed. It's just one more small piece of destruction of our society.
Let's go into that. But first, I just want to say that to get this off my mind, that, you know, since this happened, just since this trial started, and I've been, you know, following it, and particularly towards the end, you know, and the closing arguments and so on, and I did manage to listen to them. I am so, and then the way, then what these black people are saying, and not only black people, but a lot of them that they, you know, these tweets and so on, I have never been more disgusted and with minorities. And I don't think that, you know, I'm ready to just say now, straight out, without worrying about it, that we must separate from these other racial groups. You know, we can't live in the same society with them. As we can see, what, as you're saying, we're already destroyed, you know, basically.
In our minds, yes.
Yeah, but I'm wondering how many people, because I've heard some people say something like this, although they are people who think like we do anyway, but still that they're just absolutely disgusted, don't even want to look at these people, don't want anything to do with them. And one person I heard say this was someone who used to say that, well, there's some good black, he had some black friends, and or, you know, blacks are okay, and they're not so bad, some of them, things like that. But now they're just like across the board, I don't want anything to do with any of these people. We're so disgusted. I wonder, do you think that this could be a part of a turning point?
No, I don't think it will be a turning point. But what you're getting at, I agree with, is that it will open the eyes of many, many white people, no doubt. Just as the other analogous things that have happened in the past, the OJ trials, the LA riots, and Rodney King trial, and the result of that, that I can look back in my own awakening, my own racial identity, and see that that was one of the things that started to break the ice in my mind, that I might not have felt so proud to be white or known much about being white in the whole history, and certainly didn't want to confront anything having to do with the Jews. But I could see that I did not want to be around blacks, and that there was very, very good reasons for it. Even if in the media you were supposedly a bad person for thinking that way, in my own mind, I was very comfortable with the idea that I have to do that anyway, just for my own good, no matter what the media says is good or bad. And there's successive levels you go through after that. So the people who are being woken up by this whole Trayvon thing, and just how over the top it is, it may be years down the road before they finally put all the pieces together and figure out enough of it to get.
Well, where you know, we are. When you think about how long ago the Rodney, was it Martin? No, Rodney King case, the Rodney King case happened. I remember that so well. That was a long time ago. And then we've had some things since, and yet people still feel like they have to say, well, you point to some successful black people and say, see, you know, that's, but I think by now, the argument should be able to be used that basically, except for a few better examples, These people cannot function in this type of society. They don't have the IQ to do it.
Yeah. Well, it's not good for white people. It's analogous to a zoo where the cage doors have been all thrown open, and we're just all supposed to pretend like it's okay, and that we're the bad people if we decide to leave the zoo, if we try to get away from the zoo, we're stupid, crazy, or evil.
Well, I'll just throw this thing in here. It's not what I was going to say in the beginning, but there was this little story called "Demographic Change Amplifying Racial Inequity." Excuse me, I just put some lemon in my mouth. Amplifying racial inequities. And here it is, that no matter what happens, these racial inequities are the reason. There's a woman who has a one-year-old, and she's taken her to daycare. They're black, you know. And she has some kind of a degree. She works with, you know, education and something. And she is saying basically in this story that blacks are going to be behind even if they're a majority. Even when whites are in the minority, she says, and this whole article by the AP is agreeing with it, basically. Even when whites are in a minority and blacks are like in control, they don't say that, but I say that, they still won't have equality. Because no. They'll still be dropping out of school. They won't learn. And for this, they need super enrichment. They were talking about enrichment programs. And if they said, black kids who have been put in, I don't know what age, they're probably talking about preschool, been put in these super duper enrichment programs where there's just so much enrichment, you know, that they then do real well. But of course, we know that little kids will do well, but they reach a certain level. All races, all people do, according to their race, they reach a certain level and then they don't go beyond it, no matter how much enrichment you give them, you know, after a certain age. But they say, but there's not enough money for this kind of enrichment programs for all the black kids. So still, they're still talking about how it's not going to be fair, you know, it's not fair. Well, it's because black people in general cannot accomplish what white people do. They have a much lower IQ.
They can't, but that's not the main reason that we should separate. The main reason to separate is they're not us, and they can't change into us, and they're destroying us. They're helping to destroy us.
Yeah, but also, wouldn't you say, though, that they can't function in a society that we want to have?
No, they can't.
That's the society to something much worse.
Yes, that's the source of the alienation, is the society that they're comfortable with, we're not comfortable with, and the society we're comfortable with, they're not comfortable with. You could see it objectively, most white people are good at being objective about things, and we can see that objectively it just doesn't work, and we should separate. That's the obvious answer to this. Have separate countries governed by our own people that we look up to and respect and trust. But now this is where the Jews come in. The Jews are the ones in control. They have the political power, the financial power, and the media power. They won't allow it to happen. And even if the blacks were capable of becoming like us, had comparable intelligence, comparable capacity for civilization, look at the Jews. The Jews have the capacity for civilization. They are intelligent. They're just as bad or more destructive to us. It was their poisonous ideas and their poisonous moralizing, which convinced white people that we were bad people, that we had done all these bad things, and to make up for it, we have to throw open our borders and treat not everybody equal. I mean, that was the bait and switch that they said it was about treating everybody equal, but what it really is treating everybody better than whites.
Yeah.
White people are supposed to create a society that's great for everybody else, and we're not supposed to worry about how it is for whites, because that's racism. That's what they call racism. It's a fraud, and it was a fraud from the beginning. They knew it was a fraud when they started the ball rolling decades ago, centuries ago, when the Jews were first being emancipated. Throughout their history, I've been reviewing the Jewish problem, going back in history. This is just, you know, we're in a repeat of history here. It's a little bit more end game for us now. For white Americans and whites in general, things look much grimmer today than they ever have in the past. That aspect of it is not a repeat. It's novel. It's new and new.
You know, in this country today, what I notice is that according to all these people who are quite happy with the way things are going, all the Trayvon fans and the media and so on, and then you take something like Huffington Post and Salon.com. Now, which one? They're both so left-wing and so anti-white. Which one do you think is more so?
Salon for sure is
more than Huffington Post, really.
Yes, I think Huffington Post is broader and it's a bigger organization with a broader fan base, whereas Salon is much more concentrated. It's much more obviously a clique of Jews that own it and run it, and they have a few pet Negroes that they keep around to write, and pet other minorities to write other things from, you know, pro their own type of people. As Huffington Post does. Huffington Post has a whole separate section for dedicated to blacks and another one for Latinos.
Yeah. If you go to certain, if there's certain areas at Huffington Post, they get pretty far. They're pretty far gone. I'll tell you, I'm shocked at the stuff they put up there. But like you say, there's a lot there. I don't look at it all. So.
And in a way, they're only one step beyond what something like what you can find at the Washington Post or the New York Times.
Well, the thing is, I was going to say about these people and these groups, and yeah, just the media in general, we're already done. You know, we're already a minority. We're finished. This is not a white country. We, you know, we shouldn't think that we have any rights or that it is a white country. And they want us to keep saying that, oh, white supremacy is the problem and so on. But they already see us as defeated, basically, I think, from the way they write things.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just it's a transition from the fraud and the lies that the fraud is based on, that it's about equality and they want to have a conversation about race. And, you know, they don't want to have a conversation. They want to tell us what to give them and how fast to give it to them. That's what the conversation is from their point of view. And who would they have the conversation with anyway? I made this point in my blog just this afternoon. These calls for after describing blacks as victims. Blacks in general, not just Trayvon Martin, but because of what happened to Trayvon Martin and him being such an angelic, innocent youth child, that this what this means is it's open season on blacks in general, and certainly on black kids. And, you know, after describing this one black columnist, one of the hundreds that there are in the mainstream media that as a black person identifies positively as black and comes to the defense of blacks, and isn't accused of racism, isn't fired for being a racist or a bigot or a chauvinist, says we need a conversation about race. And the conversation he wants to have is how, hey, I've just laid out how we're the victims here. Time to pay up, whitey. Time to do even more. And this is, you said earlier about how as whites become a minority. Well, even when whites are gone, they will still be blaming whitey. The various shades of brown people that remain will be arguing about how this or that is actually whitey's fault, evil, evil whitey. The demonization will be to the extent they have any sort of civilizational memory at all or civilizational communication. It'll be enshrined as whitey is Satan, basically. And
well, I just went and looked at your blog and saw you had this new one up. I hadn't looked at it yet. I looked this afternoon.
I wanted to let people know I'd be on.
And that's pretty funny. People should go discussing Trayvon Zimmerman with Carolyn Yeager. And these pictures you've got here, I couldn't figure out what this Trayvon Martin was, but I had to enlarge it, and then I saw he was in the he was a fetus in the womb.
Yeah, it's a characterization of what the media did, the way they exaggerated Trayvon Martin. They continue. I mean, they doubled down. They did it when the original attack and killing happened. They portrayed Trayvon Martin with these pictures of a 12-year-old kid or, you know, obviously much younger than he was during the attack, and portrayed Zimmerman as this evil white racist who stalked, hunted blacks. And in the intervening year and a half since the incident, and especially now with the trial, the facts have been laid out and testimony has been given that reveal a different story about everything, that it wasn't a white racist. It was a mestizo Obama voter who hadn't said a racist word or belonged to a racist organization in his life. One aspect
did,
I'd like to talk about is that.
Did he actually vote for Obama? Did he say that he had voted for Obama?
I don't know. And I've heard him referred to that way. That's. But he, you know, is basically a liberal. He identifies as Hispanic. Comes from he's second generation immigrant. You know, he basically identifies with people of color more so than white people. He was acting white in the sense that he was serving as a neighborhood watch, trying to keep his neighborhood. You know, something that I don't know. Did blacks ever do that?
No, and they don't have those kind of neighbor. Well, some blacks live in a neighborhood like that. It's they're in with a white neighborhood.
That's why they move to white neighborhoods. Yeah,
that's because, why they yeah. blacks. They're blacks who are you know are who are better people. They want to live among whites. They still associate probably and socialize mainly with other blacks of their caliber or something. Yeah. But they want to live among whites because it's so much nicer. And yet they won't. Yet they'll still. Support or stand by while these blacks get away with all this stuff, these low class blacks, and they won't support whites. I'm sure.
Right. Well, what this incident from the beginning and all along has demonstrated clearly is the difference in racial attitudes between blacks and whites, the strong contrast there, that the blacks have this nearly monolithic reaction in favor of Trayvon Martin and against Zimmerman, whereas whites are more divided on it. And willing to evaluate what happened. And that what that tells us is blacks identify racially. What whites are not supposed to do, we're not supposed to think of our whiteness as anything good, as anything to defend. And but blacks are, and blacks do it right out in the open with no apologies, no apologies expected by the media or the government, and none offered by blacks. And they freely express their race-based resentment of whites, and that obviously fuels how they see the world and what they do in the world, and these thuggish impulses we see from them, not only of the way Trayvon Martin reacted to being shadowed through the neighborhood, you know, instead of saying, like any white person would do, is walk right up to Zimmerman and say, hey, my name is Trayvon Martin, I live with my dad right down the street or something. Instead, he got aggressive. And
well, if I was so close to my home, like they say he was only a few houses away from his father's home or something, if I thought somebody was following me, of course I'm female, I would just hurry and get home and get inside my house, you know?
That's the other, what whites consider a normal reaction.
I wouldn't be looking for trouble.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well, and that's the difference in attitude, that you see blacks think that they should be able to dress like thugs and act like thugs. And nobody should be able to challenge them. If somebody does challenge them and a fight ensues and they get shot, well, it's the guy who shot them's fault, not their fault.
Well, and then again, you know, maybe he's – I don't know where he's grown up, but maybe he's used to being in a black neighborhood, or he thinks, you know, the way you think in a black neighborhood. And now here he's in this white neighborhood, and he's acting like, you know, like he doesn't he can act any way he wants or something, and nobody should be suspicious of him. Well, let's go on to talking about how this attitude is, black attitude, let's look at what Attorney General Eric Holder said just today when he went to that Delta Sigma Theta Sorority National Convention. I got to be black woman's, I think black women's sorority of some kind. And you know,
that's profiling to assume that, but it's probably true.
Well, I think somebody said it. I think I read it. I don't think he'd be saying this if he wasn't talking to black people. It was a bunch of black women that he went to. And the words he uses and the things he says seem to me to be totally inappropriate for someone in his position. He said that he shares the worries of those concerned about Trayvon Martin's tragic, unnecessary shooting death. Unnecessary. But the verdict is already in. This was today he said this. Why would he call Martin's shooting death unnecessary, since Martin attacked this Zimmerman and made it necessary? You know, started beating him. And I even believe Zimmerman when he says that Martin said to him, you're going to die today, or something like that. But, you know, of course, we don't have any evidence for that. So it's just hearsay. But still, why would Why would you share the worries of a certain group, the black people, and call it an unnecessary death? And then he says that maybe this is his exact words. The Justice Department shares your concern. Concern about what? After the trial, after the verdict, there's this concern that somehow it wasn't done right. Well, he's the head of the Justice Department. We have everything went through the system quite well. There's no evidence that there's any tampering or any mess, anything wrong. So why would he say that he's concerned about what took place? And he says, as we first acknowledged last spring, we have opened an investigation into the matter, referring to this federal civil rights charges. So they started that way last spring. And here's something McClatchy, it says, I guess McClatchy News Service, reported that the FBI, which interviewed nearly three dozen people in the case, back when they started this thing, found no evidence that racial bias motivated Zimmerman to shoot Martin. But is he saying that? He's saying, well, we've already investigated and we haven't found any racial bias that would fit the civil rights charges. No, he says, oh, we're going to go and do this. He's catering to these black people and the people, all black people who are, reading what he said and hearing what he said to this in the news. And he says, the country must speak honestly about the complicated and emotionally charged issues that this case has raised. That kind of is what you were saying, that they talk about speaking honestly about it, but they're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. And he says that we have to have a dialogue with the same dignity that those who have lost the most, Trayvon's parents, have demonstrated throughout the last year, and especially over the last few days. They suffered a pain that no parent should have to endure, and one that I, as a father, cannot begin to conceive. What? Sounds like they talk about Holocaust survivors. We can't even conceive the suffering of these people. And what have these people suffered? They brought up this thug of a son, and obviously that night there was nobody, he's 17 years old, but there's nobody overseeing him or anything. I don't think anybody was home. He was in that house with his brother or something by himself, roaming around at night doing whatever he wanted to do. And to bring up Trayvon's parents and talk about that without mentioning, the difficulties that Zimmerman has gone through. I feel sorry for Zimmerman. Well, naturally I would. But I mean, he's been left hanging in the breeze while all this sympathy goes to the black people.
Right. Yeah, it's the victim narrative, which is a variant and based on the Jewish narrative. And you've identified the elements of it that tip you off to that fact. And it's quite reasonable. I mean, even though there's very little in the way of overt Jewish fingers on the scales or Jewish faces involved in the court proceedings and so forth, it's the mindset behind it all that's very, very Jewish and identifiably Jewish. This idea about identifying the blacks as victims, it's an inversion of reality, just like the tales that the Jews tell about their persecution, that everywhere that they've gone, they've been persecuted. It's always the other people's fault. But somehow it's the Jews that survived and all the other people are gone now. The blacks aren't that smart. Yeah. They didn't figure this out and do it themselves. It's Jews who have given them this template to follow, them these words and these phrases to use. And it's this dishonest business about that they're just looking for equality and looking out for what's best for America, when at the same time sending these subtle signals that they specifically sympathize with blacks as blacks. And it's expected by the blacks, and it's treated as normal by the same media that pathologizes and demonizes whites for even implicitly being white, going out and demonstrating as part of the Tea Party, for instance. Oh, that's horrible white racism. But when blacks organize explicitly as blacks or threaten violence as blacks, it's actually excused. And the excuse is, well, they've been wronged and they are victims. And so this is just righteous anger. And it goes back to morality and what's right and what's wrong and who is allowed to tell you what's right and what's wrong on what basis. And whites, the best thing you can get from whites that are in the media or have any position of authority or power is this clinging on to this universal falsehood, this part of the fraud that, hey, we're supposed to all be sharing a society here. The president shouldn't be pandering and Eric Holder shouldn't be pandering to a particular group and taking sides. They're supposed to represent us all. That's wrong. That's white people's mistake, is in thinking that. And when we had a government for ourselves, we could maybe do that. And even then, there's infighting between the different ethnicities, as you've made the point in your first hour, that even there's ethnic differences, even amongst white people. But it's really bad when you throw Jews and blacks and Latinos and a bunch of white ethnicities all together in the same pot, and only the whites are trying to cooperate to make a society that's civil and good, and the blacks are in it for themselves doing whatever they want, and the Jews are in it for themselves doing whatever they want, and the Latinos are doing whatever they want. It's bound to failure. And it's bad for whites. I mean, that's the main thing that whites should take away from it. This is not working for us.
Whites need to recognize that. And too many of them, I don't know, they just hide from the facts. I hope, we mentioned at the beginning that this might turn a lot of people off that were not turned off before when they see this kind of talk. Especially, I think, these comments by these celebrities. You know, I think that's kind of shocking that here you have these rich and famous people who are making million, they might be millionaires or something, or anyway, close to it. They're just like, oh, I'm shocked at this, you know, and, guilty man walked free and so on. I mean, it just shows that they can't even think straight. They can't even consider, what might have really happened there.
Right. The Ice Cube, the one that got me was Ice Cube's twit. Ice Cube is this gangster rapper, the tough guy thug image, which is promoted by the Jews and their media, the Jews media. That's one aspect of it, this black music that they promote. And Ice Cube is one of the best known examples of that. And what does he twit? Some business about that the worst thing about this is Zimmerman is now going to be free to go kill other children. As if that's what he cares about, this big tough guy, this big black thug cares about the children.
I'm all for free speech, but do you think that some of these things that these well-known people are saying could be, they could be sued for it?
No, but some of them may be trolling. Some of them may be so over the top because they're actually just trying to mock and ridicule. I made that point, too, and amongst those many apparently earnest statements of outrage and moralizing, you could see a few sprinkled in there that were mocking the whole idea that Trayvon and not so much mocking.
I didn't
Trayvon,
notice that. Do you have
reaction.
An example? I didn't. They all seemed like they.
Oh,
really
there was one of the Wayans brothers said something about, oh, if you guys are going to riot, make sure to get me a pair of shoes or something like that.
I see.
And to a certain extent, it's possible that blacks haven't rioted because they are fairly well off these days. I mean, they complain a lot about being victims, but they realize if they're well behaved, they actually can get rewarded, like Ice Cube. And you don't even have to be all that well behaved. I mean, Ice Cube is one of these guys who talked about being a cop killer and all the rest, and wrote it to millions of dollars and fame and fortune.
I'll tell you, it makes me sick that all these really retarded black people are in these big jobs, you know, all in entertainment and sports and so on, making all that money. And
I wouldn't care what they were up to if they were in their own country. I mean,
what I mean is it's here, you know, and they're taking all this and we've got all these white people watching them. They're all over in the movies and television programs and they're in advertising and they're models and they're just everywhere more and more and more. It really makes me sick because it's not my country. I mean, I want to be in a country of people like myself, and it's just getting less and less of that. And I've my own feelings, not that it's going to make a difference, I guess, but is that I can hardly stand this world anymore. I don't even want to be in
it. Don't talk about that. No, never really? Give up. Don't let the bastards grind you down. It's
well, it's just it so ugly. Feel, it's so horrible.
But it should make you want to fight harder. Just turn that feeling of
I do, but you know,
back into energy to aim back out at them. I wanted to say that normally the Jews media presents. There's two facets to what they do. They present this glorification of blacks, you know, a sort of fantasy of the black scientist or the black savior. God is black, literally. And then on the other hand, they play down in the news, the hard news, they play down the actual violence and harm that blacks are really doing in our society. But what the Trayvon thing brought out was the reality, which is these surly thugs like Trayvon, these surly morons like his girlfriend, Rachel Gentile, and these surly whiners like Al Sharpton and all the other race hustlers that have come out of the woodwork to rile up blacks and make them think that they're victims. That's the norm, really. That's, you know, you stripped away of the Jewish spin doctoring. That's what blacks really are, and that's why people want to get away from them. They don't want to and white people. You know, if a black moves into their neighborhood, they realize the government is actually going to come down on my head if I do anything to try and force the blacks to leave or to keep them out. So the only option open to me is to either grin and bear it or get myself a gun and try and protect myself or get out. And many people have chosen that option to get away. And what does this regime tell us about those people? Well, they're bad for trying to get away. It's like I said about the zoo. You know, it's one thing to say, we're going to have this zoo and we're going to open up all the cages. And if you like that kind of environment, come to our zoo and we're going to charge you money to come to our zoo. It's another thing entirely to say, you're going to go to that zoo whether you want to be there or not, and you're going to pay us money for it. That's the situation we're actually in here. We're not allowed to set up our own societies where we exclude these people.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying this, they already see that we're done for in this country. We're not in charge and we're not going to be, and they're not worried about us. They just keep grinding us down until, you know.
I would differ with that. I think they know that if we did turn our mind to it, if we did get our minds straight about who is us and what is best for us and started thinking along those lines, we could very quickly cause a lot of trouble and turn things around even. You can look at our military and you know, it's sent off to do bad things that are bad for white people and bad for other people around the world. But when white people set their mind to destruction and to organize destruction, we're pretty good at it. We're better than just about anybody else. So it's really just about getting our minds straight. And that's why it's so important to discuss this stuff, to take it apart, to understand who's doing it to us, so we know where to shoot, who to shoot when the shooting starts.
Well, let's take apart what President Obama said. And, you know, we made such a mistake. I knew it. I said so when we elected this guy, or when people thought, well, it'd be okay to have him. It's such a mistake just to have a black president. I don't care how bad the white president would be. I don't care how much he loved Israel. Be better than to have a black president. And now we got a black attorney general. What a combination. Now, Obama comes out and he says, the death of Trayvon Martin was a tragedy. What kind of a thing is that for a president of a country to say about some little kid in Florida who, you know, was a pot smoker and a
junior thug, not
all,
a little kid.
This kind of stuff. You know, and before, of course, he had made that comment that Trayvon Martin could have been his son. So he was going through all that stuff before. But now he said this. To me, that's an assumption of innocence. If his death was a tragedy, you're assuming that he was innocent. And that's what everybody's doing. But, you know, I don't see him as innocent. It was a bad kind of a situation. But I don't think when you're walking around at night, dressed like he was, and in a neighborhood like he was in, with the neighborhood watch and so on, that you can really consider that he was innocent and something happened to him. And then he says, not just for his family. So again, he's sympathizing with this black family, with this one little black family. and holding them up as some kind of special, you know, people who are suffering, when you've got all these people who have tragedies in their lives, who have all these, what about all these white people who are killed by Negroes? Does he ever say anything about that? Does he come out and say this is a tragedy or any other kind of thing? Why do they pick out a certain thing? Because they want to make an example of it. And then he says it's a tragedy for his family, for a community, and for America. Good grief.
Yeah, that's the fraud. That's the lie.
Yeah, it is, really.
He doesn't give a shit about the rest of America.
No, and then he says, in the wake of the verdict, I know those passions may be running even higher. So he's like criticizing the verdict. He's saying, well, the verdict is not popular. At least he's saying that. Okay, in the wake of the verdict, those passions may be running even higher. But then he goes on, we're a nation of laws. Jury has spoken. You need to reflect. Then he says, what we should do is to widen the circle of compassion and understanding in our own communities. Well, I don't know. Does he think there's a lack of understanding? It's like saying there's not enough compassion and understanding for black people by white people. That's basically what he's saying there. Yeah. And then he talks about the tide of gun violence, as though this was not gun violence. Zimmerman shot this guy. It was necessary use of gun for protection. You know, that's why he had a gun.
It is connected to the gun thing, though, but the sides are the same. You know, the people who advocate in favor of gun ownership that see this case as confirming that belief. The people who are against guns and want to take them away, they see it as confirming their belief in that guns should be taken away. But it's disingenuous, I think, on the other side taking the gun away would have changed anything or would have prevented a tragedy. It probably would have changed who got killed. Trayvon Martin would have killed Zimmerman, and then nobody would have ever heard about this case. That's what would have changed if there were no guns. And that's what they're trying to do. They know the whole gun thing is about taking guns away from white people. And all of the moralizing and crying crocodile tears about gun violence ignores the fact that most of the gun violence is blacks, and most of it is black on black, but the deplorable part from a white point of view is the black on white violence, and why white people get guns to begin with is to defend themselves from mostly black violence, or even just the perception that there's black violence. And you know, if you can't get away from it, at least you get a gun to try and protect yourself from it.
Right. Now, without this gun, I suppose he would have maybe been killed, because this guy, Martin, was in a rage, you know, and he wanted to kill him. And I don't know what he was going to do then, run home and think he, you know, would get away with it. I don't know. He would have come up with some story about how he was being attacked. But, you know, without a gun, yeah, right, you have no self-defense, and nobody's going to defend you. The police are not going to come around and defend you. You know, they take a long time to show up anyway, most of the time.
Yeah, and so they don't have a duty to protect you anyway.
Right.
And that's part of this, too, is as a reaction to our government not protecting us and, in fact, being our enemies, and the police not being obligated to protect us and not doing enough to protect us, we try the next best thing, which is to organize as communities. Well, that is what's under attack in this case, is they don't want these neighborhood watch type things going on anymore. They want us to just be totally defenseless. They want to take away the guns. They want to take away neighborhood watch. And then we'll be defenseless, or more defenseless than we are already, because we already are.
What about the delusional character of all this? Do you think enough people are going to see through it?
I think many will. I think it'll wake people up. Yeah, and that's why conversations like this are important. Is you know, you point out the Jewish involvement. The Jewish involvement in this and the connection to Jews in this is no more absurd than the white connection to this. And yet in the major media, you hear whiteness dragged into this and racism. And they're talking about if you're confused and think the racism might be brown on black racism. No, there's people like Tim Wise to point out to you that it's about white supremacism and white privilege, even though whites had nothing to do with this. White people probably won't run into conversations like ours, but at least a few will, hopefully, and have their eyes open. Some will open their eyes themselves to a certain extent and only later discover conversations like this and come to an understanding like ours about what happened. That's what I just think back in my own experience to OJ and what I experienced at that time and how now it makes much more sense to me how I reacted, what I did, and how it was only a partial understanding even. But even with that partial understanding, I was able to start doing things that were more intelligent, moving away from where the problems were and knowing why. And even though I wouldn't share that with the people around me as to what I was doing or why, because I was afraid how they would react and the social shunning that's involved there.
Right. Okay. Go ahead, Tan. I just answered a call, though, from somebody.
Let's see what the caller has to say.
Okay. Are you there, caller?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can you tell us who you are and where you're from?
My name's John. I'm from Mississippi. But since an early age, I've been called John Boy. So.
John Boy. Okay. Well, what do you have to say?
Well, he just hit on that. If you look up the FBI statistics, the black-on-white violence hugely outweighs the white-on-black violence, and they're supposed to be in the minority. Now,
well, that's well known. Yeah, I think that's pretty well known and been covered quite a bit by.
I'll get down on occasion, and I listen to you guys all the time. I wonder when are white people going to wake up and all this. I've come to the conclusion a lot of them are doing what I am. And what am I doing? I'm waiting on chaos to hit this damn place. And then I'm going on a hunting trip.
Well, you know, a lot of people are waiting for that. I wonder if that we're being fooled with that, and it's not going to happen that way.
I don't know what's going to happen. That's, you know, this is a scary
time. Well, I think a lot of people are just saying, well, I'm going to wait till just like all hell breaks loose, and then I'll go out and shoot a bunch of people. But, you know, like, I think that the reason that there wasn't more, two reasons about there wasn't a bigger, you know, reaction to this. And I don't think there's going to be either, like this looting in the streets and so on and shouting and running around in the streets. Because they know that it's not going to do any good, and we're waiting for them to do that, to show, make them look bad. And they're going to use this to just like we'd like to use it, to get their people really angry and really focused, and they're going to go about trying to make some legal changes, the gun law and the stand your ground and things like that.
Well, the whole thing, I mean, the guy was Peruvian and Jewish, and they laid it off on white people.
Well, people say that. Are you believing that he's Jewish? You know, I heard somebody just today say that. And I don't know any. Well, what kind of way is that to talk about things? You wouldn't doubt it. Somebody said, oh, his name is Zimmerman. That's a Jewish name. So he's Jewish. Tan, go ahead.
It's ambiguous. It's not known for sure whether he's Jewish or not. He hasn't identified himself as Jewish, and I haven't seen any hard evidence that he is. I think what's important, even if they don't riot
John.
The media has already given us the meat, and what will wake people up is this anti-white narrative. It's gone beyond the normal realm of left and right food fight, you know, the conservatives versus the liberals. This is racial, and it has been from the beginning. It's against white people. White people are the bad people here, even though we had nothing to do with it.
You're absolutely
right. That's what will wake people up.
And you know, as far as the last name being Jewish or not, I'm not necessarily
Jewish. It's not a Jewish name. And I heard John DeNugent say, oh, a name that ends in Mon is Jewish. Oh, come on. You know,
I'm not saying for sure that he is, but either way, they spin it, and I'm the Tan on this one, to make white people look bad in general. And I'm just so sick of it.
His father. He didn't particularly look Jewish. I don't think that Zimmerman acts Jewish. It seems to me, and I'm not trying to, you know, be on his side or anything, but it seems to me that he probably gets along pretty well with white people and kind of relates to them just fine. And relates to his Hispanic heritage. I just don't see any evidence, any reason to call him Jewish. And this is what bothers me about people on our side that want to jump to that right away without any evidence, as Tan said. And that just confuses the issue, and we lose sight of what we really need to be thinking about and just start calling names.
Well, you know, like I say, I don't care one way or the other. The thing that I'm upset is the same thing you guys are upset about, is that painted as a whole thing is, oh, well, this man's white and he's evil and all that, you know.
Well, he could have been white. What if it happened with a white person? You know, so to me, that doesn't really make any difference.
Well, they see him as white,
and that's how they're going to react to white people. That's the point we're making here. It's not to say, he's not white, so it's not, you know, forget it. We don't care what happens to him. It's that they see him as white, and it could very well be a white person. It's this white-black thing.
Yeah.
Well, if I were one of the talking heads on TV and they threw that up to me, I'd throw the FBI statistics on them like you guys were talking about. Mm-hmm. But I'm a Southerner, as you could probably tell.
Yeah.
I'm a Southerner, and, you know, I have friends of other races. I have black friends, I have white friends, and all that. But at the same point in time, I also realize that the black race has been thoroughly, if they weren't ruined to begin with, the press finished it up. And the press is working on our young people while I'm at it. I went to Walmart the other day and I saw some of our young kids and they're playing these damn handheld video games and they're about 40 pounds overweight. And I think, my God, is this what's happened to my race? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're right. We see way too many bad looking people from our race. Tan, we've got only 6 minutes left. I'd like you to make sure you say everything that you
Yeah, there was just one more point, and we've kind of touched on it a little bit, almost gotten there a couple of times now. And that is, you know, with all these hypotheticals that various people have proposed, and I'm mainly thinking the mainstream now, about what if Trayvon had been carrying a gun and shot the other guy, you know, how would whites have reacted to that? Well, what if Zimmerman had actually used the word nigger? What if he had actually been to the white network? It seems like even a lot of the white people who are willing to basically take Zimmerman's side, look at the evidence and take Zimmerman's side, would be the ender for them. They would then convict Zimmerman and they would agree that that was justified, that he was obviously a racist, a bad person, just for that. And that would be enough to put him away. And it was only because Zimmerman wasn't really white, didn't really say any of those things, didn't have any of those associations, that he was declared not guilty and judged actually fairly based on the evidence by the jury.
Right.
Now, John, don't hang up because we need you to stay on till the program ends so that we hear our prompts and music and so on. But let me just point out here then, since you were talking about what Zimmerman said and what he didn't say, in that his record is really very good and they can't hang anything on him. But you're right, if they could, it would be different, and he still would be an innocent person.
Well, yeah,
even if he had racist views. So the whole crime is being a racist, you know, and that's what they're trying to stick on every white person.
Well, if he had called the police and said, "I'm following this creepy ass nigger who I think is robbing houses here," you know, that would have been enough to convict him in the media's opinion, but in many of the white people, in their opinion too. In fact, what came out during the trial was that if race played a role at all, it was on the Trayvon Martin and his girlfriend's side, where Trayvon Martin, his girlfriend, said that he had referred to Zimmerman as this creepy ass cracker. Nobody blinked at that. This media that's hypersensitive to racism didn't think anything of that. That's perfectly normal.
They had to kind of, brush over it or apologize a little bit for it and say, "Oh, they're young kids, you know, that's the way youth talks."
But exactly.
They wouldn't make those excuses for Zimmerman. But, I used to think that cracker, when they'd say, well, they'd bring up people using the word nigger, and they say, what about cracker? They used to call whites cracker. I thought, what's wrong with being called a cracker? I mean, see, because I wasn't offended by it. And most whites are not offended by names like that. But now, after hearing, there's another thing that happened with this trial. After hearing that testimony and that stupid girl and all this, I thought, that is, they always say that. They say, creepy ass cracker, or cracker this, or cracker that. That's as bad as nigger. It really is. It has become so. And we should make an issue of it, I guess.
Well, nobody's going to listen in the media. We're not going to get any sympathy from them.
Well, what about Zimmerman and his lawsuit? They are going to sue NBC. And I don't know if I have all the points here why it won't work. But then other people say it might, because NBC just might decide to settle rather than going through the whole thing. And that would be just great if he could get his own. And do you think that the Justice Department will carry out a civil rights suit against him? I don't think so.
There's two suits that might come from the other side. The family, family may bring a civil suit. And then the civil rights federal suit that may come. And then there's the suit of Zimmerman against NBC. I don't know. I don't think it will change the racial equation. Zimmerman's suit against NBC, and even if he wins a big judgment, it won't change people's, it won't change the media's spin on the story at all.
Oh, no. It won't.
It won't prevent them from doing it again. They'll just consider it an expense as it is. Major media is a money losing proposition anyway. And so this is just going to be considered another thing on the balance sheet, that the price that they pay for having their anti-white propaganda spread.
Well, I'm still glad that he's doing it. I really am. I think it's good to fight. That's an example of fighting back.
He should fight back. I hope he does. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think the family suit will win either, because I just can't see that there's any. They've already admitted that there's no civil rights violations that the FBI could find. Well, we've got 30 seconds to go. I want to thank you, John, for calling in. And thank you, Tan, very much for coming on tonight. Boy, this hour really flew by. My first hour went slow. This one went super fast.
Thank you, guys, for doing such a good job.
Yeah, thanks, Carolyn. Glad to join you. Thanks, John.
Anytime.
Well, okay, ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Heretics Hour on July 15th. And to come back again next week for another Heretics Hour. Good night for now.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.